foda.
Hello and thank you for joining us for The Backside of Water, a podcast that delves into the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions. I'm Alex Stewart.
And I'm Harrison Ownby, and thank you for joining us for episode 15 of our podcast. This episode we'll be focusing on an attraction called The Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
I'm actually pretty shockingly excited about this episode.
Really?
I wouldn't have been. Yeah, I wouldn't have been before I had a child, but it's awesome because as of like 2 weeks ago, my son is super into Winnie the Pooh right now.
Really?
And so, yeah, I'd like to dedicate this episode to my 17-month-old son.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Of recording because
well, if it's if it's terrible, he's going to get older and be like, "Why did you dedicate that one of all the
Why
episodes?
Why did you hate me, Dad? Why did you hate me?"
And you only dedicated the Pooh episode, which was the worst episode of the podcast, Dad. Slam door.
That is
You're going to hear that in 14 years.
The thing that's crazy, though, is the fact that this really isn't an insanely popular attraction.
No, it's not. Although, and I'm giving away a little bit of trivia here that we're slated to talk about later in the podcast. It is a lot more popular in other parks, except for Disneyland in Anaheim.
Yeah.
It's pretty popular in Disney World and Disneyland Hong Kong and all over the world. It's a pretty big hit, but for some reason, it's a little bit sleepier in Disneyland than it is in any other Disney park.
It is true, and it's one of the newer attractions that we've actually been talking about. And I think that we should probably let everybody know that we are... We're kind of presenting this in a different way. This is what we're going to be calling a mini episode. And essentially, mini episodes are going to be a little bit shorter, which some people say hooray for, and some people say hooray for.
Everyone says hooray for shorter episodes.
But what we're going to be doing is the nice thing with the mini episodes is the fact that since they are shorter, odds are, this isn't always going to happen. I don't want to set this as like a benchmark, but we're going to be releasing these a little bit more frequently than once a month. So if you get mini episodes, they come more frequently, and they're not as long.
You get mini episodes with mini episodes.
I wish that I could do a Minnie Mouse voice, but for some reason, oddly enough, after working on the Jungle Cruise, I found that I talked so much that I think I actually damaged my voice. And I can't really do falsetto
really?
Anymore. Yeah, it's one of the hazards of the job, you know.
After the jungle scared the falsetto out of you, huh?
Right out.
Well, right it made a man out of you. That's what I say.
Very true.
So let's get to it, Al.
Yeah, I think it would actually be a good idea to start with the history. And before we dive into the history of the attraction, I think it would be wise to learn a little history about a character that's nearly as popular as Mickey Mouse himself. Notice how I said almost. Nobody can touch mouse status at Disneyland, of course. But what better way to learn about a classic literary character than to listen to this old Disney story cassette that I have here? Harry, do you want to pop this in over there?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Welcome to Story Corner with Hal Holden. I'm Hal Holden. Today we're going to be reading the absolutely true story behind Winnie the Pooh. Whenever you hear this sound, that means you listeners at home need to turn the page. Well, shall we begin? The story of Winnie the Pooh begins with a man by the name of A.A. Milne. He was an English author in the 20th century. Well, one day Milne decided it was time to turn his talents towards something that would please one of Milne's biggest fans, his son, Christopher Robin Milne. Christopher Robin Milne had an entire room full of stuffed animals that brought the boy much delight. So Milne began writing a story about his son's favorite stuffed toy, a bear named Edward, and his many adventures. Mr. Milne, though ever the military man, decided to rename the bear Winnie, after a Canadian black bear who was a mascot for the Army during the First World War. All the other characters remained the same, Piglet, Roo, Tigger, and more. But Milne didn't feel like the cast was quite full, so he added the characters of Rabbit and Owl from his own imagination. Milne placed these characters in a fictionalized version of a place called the Hundred Acre Wood in Ashdown Forest in England, and the books were a huge success. They made Milne and his new bear friend Pooh quite famous. Pooh became so famous that the Disney Company released an animated film about him in 1977. This was a compilation of three shorter Pooh pieces that had some linking scenes added. This film even starred a young Bruce Reitherman, son of Disney legend Wooly Reitherman, as the voice of Christopher Robin. This film was very successful as well and helped solidify the world's love for this little honey-loving bear. Pooh's next stop would be as a Disney attraction in the parks, but that's another story for another time. This is Hal Holden, thanking you for joining us for the production of the book, The Absolutely True Story Behind Winnie the Pooh. Good night.
Aw, good night, Hal Holden. Al, we really have the greatest luck finding old things to help us deliver content in a way so it isn't supremely boring.
I guess right place, right time, huh?
I think that what happens is when we sleep, various stuffed animals come alive, and through their friendship-based adventures, they find things that are relevant to our podcast. That's my theory.
You know what's really funny is you say that, but in first grade, Mrs. Hensley, my first grade teacher, which is like the ultimate first grade teacher name, Mrs. Yeah, Hensley. Well, Miss Hensley had us write our own novels, and I wrote, it's actually still a number one seller on Amazon. It was called Stuffed Animals Come Alive, and the fact that you wrote various stuffed animals come alive makes me know that we're a brodom made in heaven.
Why can't I say this word? Your reputation preceded you. That was a great story. Great story.
A lot of people.
I hope you got an A.
Oh, I got two gold stars and one heart and then a booger.
From Mrs. Hinkley?
Hensley. Mrs. Hensley, oh. Dude. She collected miniature Christmas memorabilia and had us over to
her
house once.
She sounds delightful.
She wasn't. Miss Hensley, if you're listening right now, you really made education for one kid just an absolute nightmare. Other
Look
than
what
stuffed
you did,
animals
Ms. Hensley.
Coming. I want this podcast to really take a dark turn and just be like all of the horrible things that happened to me in first grade. And then a kid stole my yellow crayon, and I didn't think it was... I thought it was him, but then I found out it had just rolled onto the floor, and I accused him and yelled at him, and Miss Hensley made me put my head on the table, and I cried.
Like 3 hours later. And during Heads Up 7-Up, nobody ever picked me, and...
And that gets us up to June of my first grade year.
Well, importantly, and we'll move on after this, this kind of tells us what kind of kid you were. What did the stuffed animals do when they came alive?
I'm glad you ask about the plot of the story. There really wasn't one, other than the fact that... Because it took me so long to just animate the whole thing and illustrate the whole thing that I wasn't really able to focus on plot. It was really just a labor of artistic integrity. So the animals came alive, and I came home, and they weren't alive. But then when the lights turned out and I went to bed, they came back to life, and life was good.
Wow. You know, that's pretty... I think most kids at 6 and stuff don't really get the concept of plot. I wrote a huge thing in third grade. It was like 105 written pages about a levitating basketball, and it reads like a postmodernist novel, I think. Like, what?
For all we knew, it was actually written by somebody in the 1950s who lived in a downstairs flat somewhere in San Francisco.
It was freshly after me watching Space Jam, so that was my inspiration. And it was just my subconscious regurgitation of that.
Oh, man, I'm so glad. I really hope that you have that buried away somewhere and you can one day pitch it and it will become Space Jam 3.
Well, that was one way to get the backstory for why people love Pooh. And it helps us understand why Imagineers wanted to include an attraction based on these characters somewhere in the park. Well, as tends to happen lately, Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh was installed in Walt Disney World, and then plans came to try to include it in Disneyland, which was the exact same thing that happened with its predecessor, the Country Bear Jamboree. Now, since the Florida property has bazillions of acres to play with, finding a place for Pooh was a piece of cake. Finding a home in cramped little Anaheim, though, was a completely different story.
Imagineers first envisioned a Pooh attraction at Disneyland to be a water-based boat ride, somewhat like Storybook Land. But for various reasons, the boat attraction idea was abandoned. So, naturally, when Imagineers feel stuck, they turn to what? A dark ride. We all love them, and they're pretty easy to create. But again, now that they had the concept, finding space to build was an even bigger task. At first, it made sense to add a dark ride to Fantasyland, since the majority of the attractions in that area are dark rides. But what would you take out of iconic Disneyland to make way for something like Pooh? The answer is nothing. Fantasyland is way too perfect the way it is. So Imagineers started scouring every nook and cranny of that park, looking for a home for the 100-acre wood to reside. And then it hit...
So really quick...
Yeah, go ahead.
They were... I was reading that they were really considering it in... Toontown.
Yes.
Yep. And they wanted to have honey pots that spun around, and it was a ride where you'd spin around in a honey pot, and that didn't pan out, but that became Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin.
Yeah, it is very true. It's crazy how there really was no place for Pooh for the longest time. It finally hit them. Not the fact that this was a forest-based story, or not the fact that it was a bear who was part of this attraction. It was the fact that there was a Pooh greeting area that finally made Imagineers decide to settle Pooh down into Sleepy Critter Country. I love that none of the other things were like, think, let's put these two together. There's a Pooh greeting area down there. Let's just put it down there. Maybe that's just me. I don't know.
No, I agree. But they kicked out the Country Bear Jamboree and Teddy Barra's Arcade. Teddy Barra's Swingin' Arcade. I believe that's the second time I've made that mistake. And the Mile Long Bar. And they made room for Pooh. Initially, there was a lot of resistance to this because even though Country Bear Jamboree was not generating a lot of attendance numbers, it had a fan following. And it was one of... It was a Walt Disney original idea, although he didn't design it for a resort initially. But one of the Disney Nine Old Men and Legends, Mark Davis, had designed it and created it. And so it really was a part of Disneyland history. It also was the first attraction to be ported in Disney World and brought over to Disneyland. So people were very... they were resistant to the change, which that happens a lot. I think there's parks are always changing, and there's always something that somebody just loves, even no matter how trivial it is. And then if one person loves it, there's hundreds or thousands of other people who love it, and there's always this little bit of resistance when something changes in the park.
Absolutely,
yeah, it was no different in the early 2000s when they decided to replace Country Bear Jamboree with Winnie the Pooh. And these...
Well, and the interesting thing is there was a group of people who were like going up against the management of Disneyland at the time to try to petition to stop them from bulldozing and taking out the Country Bear Jamboree. But unfortunately, their minds weren't changed. Apparently, the higher-ups at Disneyland thought that Pooh was going to be absolutely ginormous.
Yeah, they did. Well, and there's some cynical people who say that, well, you can't sell Country Bear Jamboree bears, don't really sell t-shirts, but Pooh does, so that's why he did it. I don't know, but, man, there is a lot of people that really love the Pooh franchise, and so from a business standpoint, there was... almost no way that they could change these executives' minds.
Oh, absolutely. So, but the thing that was also nuts, though, is how much this attraction was going to cost to build.
Yeah. Yeah, it was... And most of the cost was not really building the attraction, but tearing down the Country Bear Jamboree. That setup, specifically, it was huge, and they had raised platforms and stuff, and they had to clear all that out to make a dark ride. And it was plus all the surrounding ecosystem around there. It ended up costing about $30 million.
Wow!
And
that's nuts to put it into perspective. That all of New Orleans Square cost what, $18 million to make, and then you have just this one ride. I mean, granted, there's 30 years of time in between, but still, that's just insane to know how much cost it had raised.
Yeah, and that's in the early 2000s. I'm sure it would probably cost $40 million now, or maybe more. I don't know. I don't know how money works, but that's not what this podcast is about.
That's true. This is Finances with Harrison and Al. How to get poor fast.
We're going to interrupt this episode of Winnie the Pooh to talk to you about your investment portfolio.
So one thing that I think is really cool personally is that As we said, a lot of people were really, really bummed that they had torn down Country Bear Jamboree. But as a tribute to the fan favorite, they left Max, Buff, and Melvin all still hanging inside the attraction. These characters were animal busts that would interact with people during and interact with the animatronics during the Country Bear Jamboree show. So if you keep an eye out in the Winnie the Pooh attraction, you can see little leftovers from old Country Bear.
Do you know where they are? Where Max, Buff, and Melvin are in that ride? At some point, you go out of a door and you look backwards and they're there, but I don't remember which door it is.
For some reason, and I'm probably going to get this very wrong, if you know where it's at, listeners, comment on an Instagram post from Winnie the Pooh or tweet us about it. But for some reason, I thought that they were during the party sequence when everybody's partying at Pooh's house.
I'm not going to debate you on that.
I'm not going to debate myself because I could very well be wrong.
Well, you should have another podcast where you just debate yourself. You play both sides. Well, the pros and the cons. And then at the end, you just come to no conclusion other than, oh, no, I have no conclusion. And then it would be called life.
Wow.
Just kidding, folks. Just kidding. So the Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh opened its honey-drenched doors on April 11th, 2003. And was greeted by a throng of excited guests. People traveled from all over the park to see what Pooh and the gang was up to in this exciting new attraction. But very, very quickly, the Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh suffered from the Critter Country curse, just like its predecessors.
Indeed. Shortly after opening, guest attendance fell dramatically and has kind of stayed that way ever since. There's a ton of theories as to why Pooh's appeal has dropped, and here to talk to us today about those theories is the author of The D-Files, Myths, Legends, and Conspiracies Behind Your Favorite Disney Attractions, Mr. John F. Warren. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Warren.
Thanks for having me. The Pooh Conspiracy is one of the greatest in all park history.
Pooh Conspiracy?
Yes, sir. For years, people have believed that Pooh's lack of popularity is due in large part to its distance from the main thoroughfares in the rest of the park.
I could totally see that being true. That makes sense.
But listen. There's another theory that the attraction simply feels out of place, since many associate traditional dark rides with Fantasyland.
I think that's a great point, too, Mr. Warren.
Well, you would say that because you're clearly someone who doesn't read between the lines.
Wait, what do you mean?
Alex, you are just like all the other sheep people who are taking everything at face value and never questioning anything.
Well, dude, I'm just asking. And wait, did you just say sheep people?
The Pooh Conspiracy is based on the studies of Marjorie Fagan, a famed annual pass holder. She has postulated that there's a particular scent released at the entrance of Critter Country that's very, very slightly alters a sequence in the human DNA code that generates in guests an aversion to riding the attraction.
But why would they do that? Don't Disney execs want people to ride the attraction?
You sheep people. You ask all the same questions. Bud Zuzanka, a widely known Imagineer at the time of this attraction's creation, planted secret messages throughout the attraction speaking about the corruption and nefarious activities of the Disney Company from 1985, circa 1989, a corruption that I can't specifically talk about since I don't know who exactly listens to this radio show.
Oh, it's not a radio show, it's a podcast. And I don't know if either Harry or I have ever heard of Bud Zuzanka, the Imagineer. That sounds insanely made up. And as a side note, Mr. Warren, most crazy conspiracy theorists say sheeple, not sheep people.
Oh, you're such a typical sheep people. Sheeple was a catchy term invented by the lizard people to distract the masses while the lizard people blew up the moon.
Are we almost done here, Warren?
Anyway, Zuzanka was fired shortly after the attraction was created, obviously because they caught wind of what he was doing. He, in my opinion, is what this show should actually be about.
So, I'm Googling the name Bud Zuzanka as we speak, since I've never heard of him. And believe it or not, the internet yields zero results containing that name.
Well, surprise, surprise, that big media doesn't want you to know about Bud Zuzanka. Of course Disney would cover their tracks by deleting him from the internet. Does this make any... Are you following along? Are you connecting the dots here? Are you connecting any of these dots?
Not even a little. Folks, our guest has been John F. Warren, author of The D-Files, Myths, Legends, and Conspiracies Behind Your Favorite Disney Attractions. Hey, thanks for coming onto the show.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I wish you hadn't said thanks for coming on the show. Why'd you have to say thanks for coming on the show? Al, that's code. You don't know it, but that's the signal for the lizard people to drop the big one. I gotta go buy gold.
Wait. Here, you forgot your tinfoil hat.
Thank you.
Dude, that guy was quite the character. What bus stop did you meet him at?
I'm sorry about that. Next time I'm going to do a better job about vetting conspiracy theorists who join this show. The only thing that he says that can actually be backed up is the fact that there are beliefs that the attraction's location and misplaced feelings of this attraction are what has caused it to lose guest appeal. I don't think that there's anything based in reality about sheep people following lizard people. I was so lost the entire time. I was worried about the smell that was filling up this room.
Yeah, it smelled deeply of salmon, and I don't understand it. But like we were saying earlier, because the attraction isn't popular in Disneyland, it doesn't mean that it's not popular elsewhere. In 2005, it opened in Hong Kong, and it's one of the busiest attractions in the park. In fact, there's almost always the fast passes run out regularly. Mm-hmm. At times, there's over 120-minute wait. It's slammed. People can't wait to ride it in Hong Kong. But I don't know what it is about the one in Disneyland. Maybe it's just kind of the curse of the area because Country Bears Jamboree suffered from the same problem. Maybe it's because it's kind of out of the way and tucked in a place where people really aren't going to that part of the park. It doesn't connect to anything else. Or maybe it's because Pooh doesn't particularly resonate with Southern Californians. I don't know. I when I lived out there, I didn't remember seeing a lot of hardcore Pooh fans. It seems Pooh is kind of like a quaint English bear, the creation of a quaint English author anyway, and it seems pretty different from the culture in Southern California. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that it's really, it's a kind of an interesting conversation, actually, to have about why Pooh is no longer popular.
Hi-yo!
Because they, I mean, even John Lasseter tried to revamp the Pooh franchise just a few years ago and re-released a new Pooh into movie theaters. And it wasn't that wildly successful. But the crazy thing is, you still see Pooh all over kids' stuff. Kids yeah. just love Pooh. And I think that that's one of the reasons why they keep it, quite frankly, is because it's still there for the little ones to fall in love with. And I mean, honestly, for pound, it really is a well-done dark ride. Just because it doesn't necessarily have a character base that a lot of people resonate with, I don't think it can be denied that the design and artwork placed within the attraction is phenomenal.
Yeah. But whatever the reason that Pooh isn't as popular in Southern California, it's good to know that in Disneyland, the Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh is an air-conditioned dark ride that often doesn't have a long wait. I'll raise a Dole Whip to that.
Hear, hear.
And to those who love the franchise, we also raise a Dole Whip to you. I had thought for years that Winnie the Pooh was for young children, but I changed my mind after reading the A.A. Milne stories and watching the 1977 film. These are funny, sweet, and occasionally poignant stories about friendship and community with all of its pains and quirks. The animation and character design in the movie is timeless as well, with classic soundtrack featuring songs by the Sherman Brothers. And perhaps that's the reason that from the book to the film to the attraction, this lovable bear and his buddies represent friendship and kindness to millions of people of all ages. And this attraction continues to attract a new audience of those who love the franchise, or those who want a quick break from the heat without a huge wait.
And that's the story behind the Mini Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. As I said, folks, this episode isn't as long as the others because this is our new in the series of mini episodes. But stay tuned because there may be new surprises to come soon. Well, follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Go ahead. What were you going to say, Harry?
I was going to say something that's not related to anything that you're talking about, but I feel like needs to be said.
Oh, cool. I hope it was about Saved by the Bell.
It's not. Oh. But it was about, I meant to put this on the podcast. We got some facts wrong.
Oh, yes.
In our Splash Mountain episode. I said that James Baskett was the first African-American to win an Academy Award and that he won it posthumously. Those are both not true.
Incorrect. Wrong.
Right. So here's the thing. James Baskett was the first African-American man to win an Academy Award, but Hattie McDaniel, who played Mammy in Gone with the Wind, was the first to win an Academy Award, period. And James Baskett did not receive the award posthumously. He received it shortly before he passed away, like 6 months. So I was incorrect. He still did win an Oscar for that role, though, and he did a great job.
But wasn't the first African-American man to win Sidney Poitier?
He was the first one to win Best Actor.
So, sorry. Yeah, we were wrong, and thank you for pointing that out to one of the listeners. We want to be as integritous with the information as we have, and unfortunately, the internet is only so knowledgeable, and books are only so knowledgeable, and having an entire fan base of people who are devoted to helping us deliver the most accurate and awesome Disney information is something we're very grateful for. So
and he did it in a very gracious way.
Yes.
He said he wasn't rude about it. He was correct, and I looked into it. And what had happened, the internet wasn't wrong. I'd read the internet and then wrote the episode later and then didn't go back and look at my sources. So what was wrong was me remembering what was on the internet.
Yeah, I've been guilty of that.
Which can happen to you too.
It can happen to anybody. That's the scariest part, is you never know who it's going to happen to next. So, folks, speaking of which, follow us on Instagram, like we were saying. You can also follow us on Twitter and Podomatic. You just search The Backside of Water, and you will definitely find all of our stuff there. Another thing I would love for people to do is to give us some reviews. We don't like to completely beg for reviews, but those really help us get seen on iTunes and help us get out to more and more folks who love Disney trivia, history, and fun facts. So if you want to, you can also send us an email at thebacksideofwaterpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what your favorite experience in Critter Country is. We would love to hear from you. And until next time, watch your head and watch your step. Wait, hold on.
I wrote that down really, really confusingly. I can never remember that line. It says, so as you exit, watch your head and watch your step. And if you miss your step and hit your head, please watch your step.
Bye.
Bye.